he's got 67 on there, and that's not true.
I understand. Just a second here. Okay, my name is Mike Law, and we're talking with John Fox, and he was in C Troop.
James.
Huh?
It's okay.
James.
Yes.
Okay, sorry. And when did you get to Vietnam?
I got to Vietnam in July of 71.
Okay, and you stayed until July of 72?
72.
All right, fine. And so you were right out of AIT?
Yes.
And your MOS was?
67 November. I was a Huey repairman.
Okay, utility. Okay, fine. So when you, did anybody else from your class come in with you or just you?
No, just me.
Okay, and so you walk in the door and the first sergeant says?
He says, hello, you're going to work.
When you joined C Troop, where were they?
They were at Ensign.
Okay,
at
fine.
Lane.
Okay, yeah.
And right. I was actually transferred. When I first got to Vietnam, I was in 158th Aviation at Camp Evans.
Okay.
Which 101st. And they went home in December, or late December of 71. And I didn't have enough time in country to go home, so they reassigned me.
Oh, okay, fine. So you were with 101st for how long?
Almost 6 months.
Almost 6 months.
July to December.
Okay, and what were your duties there?
I was 67 November repairman. Worked in maintenance.
Oh, but you weren't on a ship?
No.
Okay, fine. You were just whatever.
I was in maintenance, and I ended up working in the prop and rotor shop.
Yeah.
And, that's where I got my bases on prop and rotor, which when I got this Charlie Troop, they put me in the prop and rotor shop.
Okay, fine. Now, let me ask you a question. So, when you come out of school, were you happy with the skills that the Army had trained you?
I was happy. However, my first assignment was, they were doing a periodical on a Huey.
Uh-huh.
And I was supposed to pull out and clean and put in the internal filter on the transmission.
Uh-huh.
And although we'd done this task in school, it took me about 45 minutes to remember how to find it.
Oh, yeah.
I was digging through books and everything. I got scared. But after that, now my confidence built up, and I felt like I was pretty good at it. School taught as well.
Okay, fine. Now, tools. When you get to your first duty station, did they give you a bag of tools?
They gave us a large toolbox.
Really?
Yes.
Did it have anything in it?
It was about half complete compared to what it should have been.
All right, but I mean, it wasn't zero.
No, it wasn't zero.
Okay, fine. Did they give you a mentor?
No.
They just said, you're in the maintenance, show up here and stand here or something.
They pulled out a PM sheet and they said, do this.
Really?
And walked away. And there I was.
Okay, fine. So they really didn't put their arm around you per se.
No.
Okay, so you do some work. Eventually, somebody's got to sign you off, whether it's a TI or whatever. And this may be the first time you met this man.
There are certain tasks that have to be signed off. And then when I was in the 101st, the TI had to be over your shoulder watching you. He would actually look at the torque wrench when you set the torque.
Uh-huh.
And he'd look and make sure it was set correctly. He'd watch, he'd listen for the click. Uh-huh. And then he would sign off that you had done something correctly.
Wow.
But
pretty hands-on.
Yeah, but there were certain tasks that you had to have the guy behind you to do it. The other times, they'd just come around behind you and look at it and see if it looked all right.
All right. Okay. Did you find offense to that, or did you feel like you could have used more supervision, or?
No, I thought it was the process.
Yeah, and you just had to learn the process.
Right.
Yeah. And you were not offended, or?
No.
You were
no.
Mildly scared that you might do something wrong because you didn't want to do anything wrong, or?
No, I didn't want to do anything wrong, that's for sure, but I never was. I just thought it was a process. You do something that was really critical, you had to have somebody watch it. I think, I don't ever remember really being offended, no.
Oh, okay, fine. So, who was your first friend?
There was a guy named Wallace that I seemed to work with quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even know what happened to him.
Okay.
We, when the unit stood down, we went different ways.
All right, fine. So, but you're going to be in Vietnam 6 months. That's a long time.
No.
And how many guys were in the hooch?
Oh, we, and when I was in 101st, we had Oh, there's probably 25 or 30 of us in the hooch.
One great big dorm?
It was, we had partitioned off little cubicles, and most of them were open, just had walls in between the bunks.
But there was some privacy.
Yeah. And when I was at Camp Evans, we had a typhoon to come through.
Yeah?
And I was about the lightest guy in the hooch, and I got on top of it, and guys were throwing sandbags, and I was dropping sandbags all over the roof to keep the roof on during the typhoon, and it actually worked.
Yeah, and you probably got seriously drenched.
Oh, yeah, I had my wetsuit on, but still it didn't matter. It was raining sideways. It was fun.
So you didn't make any bosom buddies in the 101st, or you did?
Not so much in the 101st. When I got to the cab, Red Gilpin and I worked pretty close together.
Mm-hmm. And,
there's three at least inside.
But Red Gilpin was we remained pretty good friends.
Uh-huh. And he was a Spec 4?
He was a E4. He was a Cobra gun crew chief.
Uh-huh.
And we worked pretty much for about 3 or 4 months. We did, you know, every daily together.
Yeah.
Worked on the aircraft, went to the club. Got up the next day and did it again.
All right.
And, when we came back, we both ended up at Fort Stewart for a while. And then he ETS'd and our DROS, ETS'd, the term then.
Uh-huh.
And I went to Bragg.
Uh huh. So you come back and go to Cobra Hall to work on the Cobras?
They sent us to Fort Stewart, but the Cobra transition had closed at that time.
Oh. They moved it back to Rucker by that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they still signed me there, so I ended up in a transportation unit driving a truck, which was terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Army can't guarantee you completely and totally ineptness, but they can do a pretty good job at it.
Yeah.
So, any rate, I don't know. We want to check on this. And
they said one more.
One more van?
Yeah, there's going to give me another van. They said one more person. I think.
All right. Well, if you mind, do you don't mind sitting here talking?
No.
So you were a Spec 4 when you got to the
cab? I was an E4 the whole time, yeah, in the cab.
Yeah. All right. Fine. So when you get there, they look on your clothes and say, "Well, you've been here a while," and so again, they put you in prop and rotor.
Right.
And so who was the guy that was running that shop? Do you remember?
I was the only one in the prop and rotor shop.
The only one?
Yeah.
You're supposed to have like 5 guys, right?
I think there were several guys that should have been in there. And the maintenance sergeant was Hamrick, I think his name was. But he left that. There was an E6, Polichowski. He was in charge of the Allied shops as a whole.
Okay.
But you know, Hamrick was in charge of all the maintenance, as far as the NCOs go.
Uh-huh.
And but that was the boss, eh? Aircraft come in that needed something. I ended up taking Huey heads apart, changing O-rings because it had them leaking oil.
Yeah.
I had to pull a Cobra head apart and found out all the Teflon bearings were falling. Teflon was falling off all of them. We had to replace them. It was a fun job. I got to do stuff I'd ever, just pull the book out and do it by the steps. I mean, it was good.
Really?
Yeah.
And did they have good TIs too?
They had good TIs.
Yeah, do you remember any of them?
I don't, you know something? I don't remember any. I looked at the picture book last night. We had an annual.
Yeah.
And I looked at it last night and I saw the TIs. I recognized their faces, but I don't remember their names.
All right, fine.
You're talking 50 years.
No, I understand. I understand. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I have met crew chiefs. They will give you an estimated date for their child's birth, but they will know exactly the 3 helicopters that they crewed. I mean, by all 8 digits. You know, there are people who live this stuff. They really do, because it was important to them.
Right.
And it's, you know, not that your child is not important to you, it's just that that's the way it goes.
I understand that. I think I did for a long time.
Uh-huh.
I think right now all I remember is 627. That was the last numbers of the Cobra crew. So.
Yeah. All right, let me ask you a question. So when do you de-roast?
I de-roast the middle of July, 13th of July 13th of 72.
72. Okay, that was pretty far down the line then.
Yeah.
Now, had they changed names?
Yeah, we were H Group 10th Cav at that time.
All right, fine. So you get there, what date do you get into C Troop?
December 26th of 71.
Okay, fine.
I remember that day because we were day after Christmas. It should have been a
down day.
Yeah. We were flying from Tuiwa to Quinyon, and we took about three hits.
Right.
We were about 2,000 feet too, which I don't understand that they did.
Well, you know, if you shoot enough, eventually something's going to hit it.
Right.
So, all right. let me ask you another question here. Did you ride home very often?
I rode home.
Were you married?
No.
Okay.
I rode to my mom. And,
Yeah,
my girlfriend quit riding me about 3 months in the country, and same old story.
Yeah. I got to find some guy that's around here. You know, you're a long range way away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I wrote my mom and
so were you drafted?
No. Oh. I was going to be drafted.
Oh, okay, fine.
But I enlisted.
Okay, fine. And did everybody in your school effectively? Was there any draftees in that class, in your 6-7N?
Yeah, I'm sure there were.
Okay.
But I,
yeah, you don't know. How many people would you guess were in that class?
I think about 10.
Really?
Yeah,
only
8 or 10. 8 or 10, yeah.
Oh, I thought the number would be much higher.
They ran them about weekly, so it was... You know.
Weekly, okay, fine. And it lasted about how many months?
There were 3 weeks for a basic mechanics course. They called it the 67-810 door gunner school, they called it. And then the Huey trend was 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so 11 weeks total at Fort Rucker.
Okay, and then you went right over after leave?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fine. So, all right. So, you, how do you spell that guy's name that was in, that you were friendly with?
Oh, Gilpin?
Yeah.
G-I-L-P-I-N.
Okay, fine.
They called him Red.
He had a real name, but...
I know he did, but I don't... Red is all everybody ever knew. Everybody knew him as Red.
Well, we got a couple of them here. They're same story, second verse. I mean, you know, their real name is Richard, but it's Red.
Yeah.
Okay. But this guy's got 5 tours in Vietnam, too, so I mean, oh my gosh. So, all right, so what was the best, most fun, or enjoyable... not stressful time in Vietnam for you? What was the best day you had there? Like Thanksgiving dinner? I'm making this up.
I don't think Thanksgiving dinner. I remember shrimp and rice one time, fried liver one time. That was a different. But I think I really enjoyed the days that when you worked, everything went good. I don't know how else to explain it. You know, that's about all we did. There was work. Most of the time I was on Vietnam, off base was off limits.
Yeah.
So you know, you lived your life on the base. Every now and then you had a USO show or something or other that came through. Some Philippine band or something like that. That was a reason to sit in the club. But outside of that, wasn't nothing significant. I did R&R in Taipei. I enjoyed that.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
And so you did just one R&R?
One R&R.
That was after you were in the cab or when you were in the...
It was after I was in the cab, which the 101st standing down kind of messed me up because I put in, I wanted to go to Australia, and they cut it out.
Yeah.
And actually, they cut out Taipei at Taiwan about a week or two after I went.
Oh.
So I was one of the last people to go there. I think Taiwan got kicked out of the Security Council of the UN or something at that time, and there was some kind of political thing that we quit going R&R there.
But did you go on R&R with a couple of your friends, or just by yourself?
No, I was the only one from the unit. We had a whole airplane full of people flying there, but I was the only one from the unit there.
Boy, you did a kind of a solo tour.
That's, well, I don't know if they could let two or three people from the same, or they could, I guess.
Oh, no, they did that routinely.
Yeah. Really?
In fact, people would request it. Yeah. They'd go to the first sergeant and say, hey, you know, can you make this happen? Well, there was some Spec 5 who was running this thing, and, you know, all he needed to do was say, okay, make this happen, and, yeah, and he would, you know, because that's right. Well, let's talk, so while you were, did you play with Cobras up in the 101st?
No, we didn't have, we were a total slick unit up there.
Okay, so what company were you with up there?
Alpha. Alpha Company, 158th Aviation.
Yeah, okay, fine. No problem with that. Okay, so you come down to the cab, they put you in prop and rotor for a while, but there was nobody in there but you. So if you got more to do than you could do, would they send other people in, or?
If I needed somebody to help me lift something or move something, or I always had, I was able to get help.
Yeah.
But as far as just the tasks on the PO sheets and stuff, that was me. And it was a pretty busy job, but we were working, you know, close to 12 hours a day, 18 yeah. hours a day. I mean, so.
Was your hooch back up near the chapel or near the flight line?
It was closer to the chapel. It was, in fact, our hooches were in a line right next to that hill they used to shoot at every night.
Yeah. I've got a picture, an overhead picture of Lane. If I can find it, maybe you could show me where it is. Because I had the, but there were... there was a maintenance hangar down lower where they stored the airplanes. But did anybody live down there?
Not that I know of.
Everybody else lived up more into the complex. Yeah.
When I first got there, our hangar was kind of down, and we shared a hangar with, I guess, 129th.
Yeah.
And then they moved us to another hangar, kind of like over hill on the other side of the clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right next to the fly line over there. They moved us over there later on, so.
Yeah, now, the one they moved you over to, was that near where the Chinook unit was? Because there was two primary big pads mm-hmm. for aircraft.
Yeah, I think we left the Chinook unit and moved to the other one.
Ah, okay, fine.
If I remember right.
Yeah, well, I'm really, let me see here. That guy was there.
Yeah.
You know him,
yeah.
Roger?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Yeah, he was there, but I don't know too many other guys that were there. One of the guys that we called him Soup.
Yeah.
You remember him?
Yeah.
He's a warrant officer?
Yeah.
His health is really...
I see that online.
It's... Yeah, yeah. He really is. Okay, so how did you graduate or move on from prop and rotor to the
well, they got
the
two
Cobra
guys,
line?
Yeah, they got two guys that were trained, school trained at prop and rotor.
Oh!
And they came in and I had to kind get of, them started.
Yeah.
And we worked together for 3 or 4 weeks and then they told me I could get in a maintenance job, so I left and went to Cobra too.
Uh-huh. And so when did you start playing with the Cobras?
That was probably the first of the real time playing with them was in April when I went to play Cobra, got into Cobra.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Cobra's just like a Huey. But.
Yeah, it is. But you know, it's got some interesting things. But,
oh yeah, skinning weapons.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you're right. Fundamentally, I mean, mechanic wise. Until you start talking about weapon systems and stuff like that, it's a Huey.
Yeah, it wasn't hard to transition.
Okay. So you said you went to play coup. Now, during those days, the troop kind of had a dual personality, both at Lane mm-hmm. to support what was left of that whole stuff there on the Bong Song plane and all that jazz. And then they probably had almost half the troop at Play Coup, on and off.
I think for the most part, the operational part of the gun platoon was at Play Coup.
Okay, fine. All right. So, okay, because they were there, you guys were there.
Right.
Yeah, right. Because they had another troop there.
Yeah, Bravo troop was there.
Yeah, and but I know that, like I said, they were. There was more work for everybody to do than they had people to do it, so they had this dual personality. And even before that, they were down at Phan Rang and places like that. And
that was a unit. Now, we had people working out of Cameron. I didn't go down there.
Uh-huh.
Well, when I came back from R&R, they had a Huey down there they couldn't get the blades to track on. And they grabbed me and said, no, you're not going back up the lane right now. You're going to stay here and track this helicopter. So they put me to work there for a couple of days, which was pretty nice. They were living in Navy barracks. They had air conditioners and flush toilets and everything. Cameron was luxury compared to Lane.
Lane was luxury compared to Sands, too. I mean, I lived in tents, so... all right, fine. So, what was your opinion of your comrades, the guys that were your peers?
Most of the guys I worked with were really good people.
Yeah. In other words, they were trying hard as the best they could.
Yeah.
Were you ever short anything? Like, couldn't get a part, or you couldn't get a tool, or...
I remember aircrafts didn't have 8-day clocks in them. I don't know whatever happened to those things. But there's always things that you needed. You had to go maybe another unit to get a certain size of torque wrench and borrow it and go do your job, then take it back to them.
Uh-huh.
Or I don't remember parts so much.
So in other words, if you would order something like a bearing,
right?
Like you said you took that head apart one time. Mm-hmm. If you would figure out what you needed, and again the book told you what you needed, so you fill out the paperwork to get the part, it would come in a couple of days.
For the most part, we got them just in a few days. I remember there was a like a clevis. It had three bearings in it, and it came off a Huey, and for whatever reason, we had a press in the prop and rotor shop, and I ended up having to press a lot of bearings into places. And they had ordered that, and it took it forever to come in.
Mm.
And they got it in, and they got the bearings, and one of the mechanics brought it to me and asked me if I'd press the bearing in for him, and I was pressing the bearing, and it slipped. And Sergeant Hamrick had a field day on my rear end because he had ordered again. At the time, they were pulling, and when the aircraft come in the maintenance, they'd pull that part off and put it on the one going out.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, they had... That was life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was life. And luckily, you had a lot of airplanes. But at the same time, there was always... did you have any interaction with the armors?
No, not there.
Yeah.
Not now. I don't remember any armors in Vietnam. I know there had to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, Somebody's got to, just like you got to play with the prop and rotor and all, some of the guy had to turn those miniguns and get them to work and
we did too. We had guys that were on the fly line that would, they just pulled them off, put them on. We helped them load them.
Uh-huh.
Helped them load 20s. When I got back to the States and we went to the aerial gunnery ranges, I had to show everybody there how to get rockets out of the boxes.
Really?
You're right. So yeah, we did that over in Vietnam too. That's where I learned that.
Yeah. From taking them out of the wooden crates to
you pull the tube out.
Yeah.
Then pull the rocket, and then you had to get the warhead. Spin it on.
Right.
And we had that's right, we did. He was an armor. When we were in Pleiku, they were unloading armors off the aircraft to send it into maintenance, and he was walking across the front of it, and somebody touched the minigun, and it popped around and hit the guy in the leg.
If you turn the barrel, it'll fire.
Yeah, well, it should have been cleared when they finished firing it, and of course, things happen.
Well, yeah, and I wish he was the only one that got hurt that way.
Then after that, they was just got really crazy about bullet catchers. You know,
as
soon as it hit the ground, you had to
put a bullet catcher on.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Which? Yeah.
Yeah. We, same thing. Years before that, they actually, avionics guys were working on a Charlie model gun and touched off a set of rockets. And one of them went into the stack, the exhaust stack of the Huey, and the guy was inside the tail boom working on something when it exploded.
Oh, really?
And he lived.
Wow.
But that Huey was just a pile of ash. But it was pretty amazing. The other rocket went out, and it was a Jeep. The guy had driven the Jeep up. And so the rocket went into right between after the wheel, front wheel of the thing, and then the seat where you'd get into the vehicle. It went right into that thing and stuck, and you could see it. So it hadn't armed yet because it hadn't gone far enough to arm.
Right.
But at any rate, so they gently picked it up with a cable and took it over to the... there's a lake not too far from Campanara, and dropped it in the lake and said, "We don't know what the heck happened to that Jeep." Nobody wanted to mess with it. It was a 17-pound warhead, you know. When that goes off, it's going to leave a big bang. So they just gently deposited it in the lake. It's probably still there today. So at any rate, so how long did you work on the Cobras, not in prop and rotor?
April. Early part of April until July when I went home.
Not all that long.
No.
Yeah. But again, it was just a job and you did it. And so.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. So, of all the people that you remember there during those days, this red guy, was that was the only one you really remember?
I remember, Miss Lone and, you know, several of the pilots I remember. Of course, a lot of them have passed now.
Yeah.
Red is probably the one I knew the best. He's the only one that I ever really kept up with.
And how long did you keep up with him?
We were through the internet and stuff like that. He passed about 4 or 5 years ago. It was just a couple of years before he passed that we really kind of quit, you know, just maybe every now and then commenting to each other.
Yeah, it's always sad when that kind of drifts away.
Exactly.
It happens all the time. Mm-hmm. But and some of it is because, you know, I got scrambled eggs and instead of brains, you know, and so I really can't carry on a conversation. And I know it.
Yeah.
So therefore, I really don't want to talk to you because I'm going to make an idiot out of myself. So, yeah. That's it. So what did you do when you got out of the Army?
Well, I stayed in the Army for 20 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I stayed in aviation until 76. I ended up going to, first they sent me to Stewart where I ended up in the truck company. I was there for 6 months and then, they were forming a cav unit at Fort Bragg, and they sent me to Fort Bragg, and I ended up with actually what was Bravo Troop of 717th.
Uh-huh.
They became Alpha and then Delta, 1st of 17th at Fort Bragg.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up with them until 76. Couldn't get promoted. The Army had way too many aviation people. You know, they had the cutoff way high. I got up and exceeded the cutoff, and they raised it. So I couldn't get promoted, so I decided I'd get out.
You were an E6 by then, or?
No, I was a 5 trying to make 6.
For 20 years?
No. When I was still in aviation, that's right. So I got out of Army Aviation, I went into the electronics field, and I worked electronics for 20 years.
Huh.
Well, not 20 years, but.
Yeah. So, You were still in the Army, or you were DA civilian?
No, I was in the Army until 91, and I retired. I fixed TVs for a couple of years, and then I got a job with the post office as an electronic technician, and I worked for them for 20 years.
Ah, I see. So what rank did you retire in the Army?
I was made E6.
Wow. And you have a lot of patience.
I went in dead fields, and... when there came a time in the Army where Vietnam veterans weren't really cared about a whole lot.
Yes.
You know, and I had a command sergeant major that I think really would have rather see me out. And he was in charge of my last three promotion boards at DA. And I've heard stories that...
You got sabotaged.
Huh? I got moved to the...
the bottom.
Not going to make a pile fast.
Oh, that's so sad.
And when you get that much time in, you...
I know.
You got to finish it. I mean...
Well, after a while, yeah, you know, the retirement is quite enticing,
mm-hmm.
but unfortunately, you got to pay your dues for that.
Right.
So, but it did, well, if you could combine that time with your post office time, you probably did more well.
I mean,
well enough.
I have that option, and make more money in military retirement than adding the 20% or 20 years to my postal retirement. But
okay.
I still get the postal retirement.
Yeah, so in essence, you got two.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Well, yeah, that's good. So, any super regrets?
No.
I mean, the country asked you to do this, you volunteered to do it, you did it, da-da-da-da-da, but...
You know, I when I joined the Army, I went into Army Aviation, and I knew that most likely I'd end up going to Vietnam.
Yeah.
I knew if I got drafted that they'd put me into whatever they wanted me to, and I'd most likely end up going to Vietnam. So I wanted to school. I wanted to work on the aircraft. And my parents lived in Huntsville, Alabama, and Redstone Arsenal's there.
Yeah, oh yeah, big time.
And they had a bunch of schools there that worked on missiles and rockets that don't go to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And they knew that if I got in one of those MOSs, there'd be no chance of me going, and they didn't like it. But no, I have no regrets. I ended up, there's a lot of things in life I've done that I didn't like.
Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta strap on your big boy pants and get it done.
Well, you know, when you grew up at that time, too,
yeah,
it was in the news every day,
yeah,
and you saw people going, and somewhere or another it was part of your life before it even happened.
Yeah.
This is a border.
I love that expression. Part of your life before it even happened. I can't. Thank you for saying that. That's going to make me think about that quite a little bit. So I had a slightly different route than you did, but that's good. So anyway. So how many of these reunions you've been to?
This is my fourth, actually.
Fourth?
Yeah. I went about 18, 20 years ago to Louisville.
Okay.
And then for whatever reason, 3 years ago, I went to Gatlinburg.
Uh-huh.
And then...
I was at Gatlinburg.
Okay. And then I went to Williamsburg last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And
But you and I never talked.
No, I guess not.
Well, that's my bad.
No, it's all right.
You're a quiet man, though.
Yeah.
But that's fine. You can be quiet.
I think... 2 years ago, Lone and Larry Richards were there. They were the only two people out of the unit I was in.
Yeah, yeah.
And Louisville, there wasn't anybody from the unit I was in.
Yeah.
No.
And then last year, my wife went with me, because she wanted to go to Williamsburg. She wanted to, had to take her out to Mount Vernon. So anyway, she said she's been here a couple of times, so she ain't coming here again.
Yeah, well, my wife is very kind. If I wanted her to come, she would, but she... rather just stay home.
Yeah, that's the same way it does.
She said, all you do is talk from morning to night anyway. And she said, I love you, but go talk. So, So, what is your street address?
6492 Wellanne. I have to spell that Wellanne Boulevard, Laurel Hill, Florida.
Okay.
32567.
All right, fine. And you have an email?
JimRFox@yahoo.com.
Okay, fine. I will, and a phone you answer?
251-605-9501.
All right, fine. I will get this transcribed and let you have a hack.
Okay.
Have a hack at it. Okay, what's the scariest time you did in Vietnam? The funnest thing you said is really when things worked out good.
We
it was more of an accomplishment than anything else.
We were One of the scarier times, I guess we were flying back from Lane to Pleiku, and it was soup. You couldn't see anything. And we was flying up over where the Manning Pass is and stuff like that, and you couldn't see, and I had thoughts we might fly inside of that mountain somewhere.
Yeah, you're right. Well, righteously so, because a lot of people did. So you were very scared and nervous for the whole time.
That part of it was very bad.
Yeah.
Can't think of too much else. Flying in a Chinook going to, when I first got to the cab, we had a change of command ceremony in Pleiku. And we had to send a platoon over there to, and I guess I was being a new guy, I got stuck on that platoon. And we was flying in a Chinook going over there, which I never liked flying in Chinooks. But there was a time where we dropped pretty fast, and you could look out the back end of the Chinook, and I know it was further up, but it looked like about 100 feet above us was the belly of a C-130 going the other way.
Mm.
And, but, of course, there ain't much reason being scared after nothing happened. But
yeah, that was scary. Yeah. Operative word was, because 10 seconds ago it was stark terror. But, yeah. Well, that was a big problem, and boy, they had more than a few midairs in Vietnam, and you know, that was just kind of a, you know, a sad commentary on the times, but nonetheless it was. But so when you got short, let me ask you this question, it's kind of silly, but it's kind of important. Did you guys have short timer sticks by then?
We had calendars, and I don't remember sticks so much, but we had calendars and little things you had marked down every day. And
Yeah. Brag about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So, when you went home, did some of the people go with you, or just go by yourself?
We got on an airplane with a whole bunch of other people.
Where did you leave from?
We left from, was it Long Bend? And,
I meant, where did you leave?
I left Monsign.
Yeah, okay. And you flew to where?
About three or four hops, I hitchhiked down to Long Bend.
Really?
Yeah, I think I ended up in a 123 for a little ways.
Yeah.
And ended up in a OB-1 or something or other, I can't remember what it was. And, you know, flew down the coastline, and we landed, might have been in Vung Tau, and then I kind of hopped from there over to
Long Bend.
Long Bend.
And were you just carrying a duffel bag?
Duffel bag, and I'm sure another bag.
Yeah.
And it was, I could carry it all at one time. I think I probably carried my house at one time. I was going home, I was ready to go.
Yeah, for sure. So, but those were kind of scary days because, man, there was nobody around anymore. I mean, everybody was, you know. I had heard stories about guys saying, if we needed to go south, we would call ahead to see if they had fuel. And if they didn't have fuel, we wouldn't go there.
Oh.
I thought, really? I mean, you know, I never thought of anything like that.
Yeah.
Once I got to Vietnam, I just, you know, unless you landed out in the boonies, you know, they had fuel everywhere.
Yeah, when we, I don't know if we enlisted when I was at Camp Evans.
Yeah.
If you're going to go somewhere, you hitchhiked. You
really
went up there's a little tower in the middle of all the bases and holler up and tell them I need to go to Fubai. You know, they get online, they find out who's flying to Fubai and say we got a pack here, and they land, pick you up, and take you to Fubai.
So you just hitchhiked.
Yeah. Hitchhiked.
So that was no big problem for you.
When. Right before I retired, I went to Desert Storm.
Oh, yeah?
And when Desert Storm got over, you time you retire, you need to go back to the States. The unit wasn't going back. I went to Don Rain and told him, I said, I need to get back to the States. I had orders. They found a C-5. They put me on it. I flew to Madrid, found another one. I flew to Dover Air Force Base, found another one. I flew to Tinker. I mean, I hitchhiked back.
Have all your stuff with you and eat when you can.
That's pretty much it.
Oh, that's That's a treat. So, well, like I said, I'll get this transcribed and send it to you, and it'll be a hoot. This will also go in the Vietnam Archive at Texas Tech. It's from VHPA's archive, but it takes a minute or two to do that. But there's a couple of release forms that I'll send you.
So. Oh, okay, no problem.
So, but thanks for your candor. And if today or tomorrow or whatever you think of something, you say, oh, I wish I would have talked to Mike about this and that, you know, because something's important to you, because really this is your history. And, you know, I appreciate people like you, I think, more than anything else, you know, because you were a good soldier. And I'm sorry, that was what the Army was supposed to be built on, was good soldiers. Not good officers, not nothing, but good soldiers. So when you find somebody that, you know, was sincere and hardworking and honest, and yeah, I'm sorry, those are the guys you really, you want to say,
no,
bravo for you. So thank you. We only needed a million more like you, but we did have a few. We did have a good handful, for sure, or more, maybe. But and those guys, you know, sadly, the history book will never have those in them because we don't know who they are, and it's sad because their contribution was huge. It really was. So, especially the helicopters were complex enough that if you didn't have people to love them, they'd kill you.
Exactly.
And so you really do need people to love them. So.
Yeah, I talk to people now. This ain't on that, but at Eglin they have a Ranger Day every year.
Oh yeah.
And I go down there, and well, back when my grandkids were little, I'd take them down there and let them. They enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
Get to shoot blanks out of the young.
Yeah.
But they always had a couple of Blackhawks that come in there, and they'd have some guys jump at them, and they got a big cord that they,
yeah.
they get down low and they hook on with D-rings they pick up, and they got a string of people and they fly them and they let them off and stuff. But I was talking to some of the pilots and stuff, and they're one of them is a maintenance officer, and he was telling me stories about the horrors they have at maintenance today. You know, most everything is on the computer and everything. They don't get it like we did. But he told me twice about bits getting dropped into an intake. And I said, bits? And he said, yeah, you know, screwdriver bits and stuff. I can't imagine they allow people to get around a helicopter with a set of bits and a handle.
That could possibly drop into it.
Yeah, bits are, you know, held on by a magnet. I mean, you know.
Yeah, right.
And he said, oh, yeah, they do it all the time. I was in charge of maintenance there, they wouldn't do it at all. But
wow.
And just the little problems they have now. They're all different, but they're terrible problems. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know what you said that brought that to my mind, but you did.
Well, good for you. Good for you. Anyway, anything else for this tape recorder?
I don't think so, not right now.
Anyway, thanks a million, James. You're a treat. You go by James?
Jim.
Fine. I want you, whatever your name is, that's what I want.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks so much. Take care. This was